You're listening to Simpler One Earth Living from Jubilee One Earth Economics and Simple Living Works. This is episode 100 of the Common Good Podcast with co-host Lee Van Ham and Jerry Iverson. Today we feature Lee's conversation with the Cassidys, who recently attended the California Climate Summit. Greetings, Lee, from Sioux City, Iowa, and Simple Living Works.
And greetings, Jerry, from San Diego and Jubilee One Earth Economics. I want to say to the listeners that you may or may not have heard of the Climate Summit that was held this past September 12 to 14 in San Francisco. Governor Jerry Brown convened it shortly after it was learned that President Trump would withdraw the U.S. from the Paris Accords, and he immediately saw the need for some leadership to say lots of us want to be in those accords. And so this conference was initiated then, and it was attended by a couple thousand leaders of people, decision makers and mayors, governors, business people, a good contingent from China. Well, what happened there? Our conversation today is with two people who were there, Derek and Nancy Cassidy. Oh, and then what about Al Gore? What's he doing these days? Hopefully you saw his 2006 documentary, An Inconvenient Truth. Maybe you've seen another documentary since then. Well, we'll also hear about Gore's recent conference in Los Angeles. Nancy was there. Well, this program is entitled Actions on Climate Science When National Leaders Are Hostile and Big Business Won't Do Nearly Enough. Not only are these national decision makers, many of our national decision makers failing us, they're actually working against us. Even at the state level, some of that's going on. In too many cases, decision makers are not acting to protect and serve the people. Take, for example, North Carolina. Maybe you have heard that legislators there voted in 2012 to ban the use of a report that showed the ocean could rise as much as 39 inches, you know, that's over a full yard, by 2100. Well, then Florence happened. And now, whether you call it climate change, whether they make that connection or not, the truth is the sea is rising, the ocean is rising, and North Carolina's taken a huge hit that's still continuing, at least as we make this recording. But then the story's coming out of San Francisco. September 8, my daughter was involved in a march of 30,000 people. She was excited because there was no speechifying. It started off with meditation for 30 minutes, and then Native Americans, indigenous people, led prayer. Then they marched. She said it was really an extraordinarily different kind of march. Then that was followed by the conference I've already referred to. Not everybody was happy with that conference. There were protesters. who especially were unhappy with Governor Brown's inability to address fracking in the state. Soon, there's going to be a report coming out, another intergovernmental climate panel report coming out, and what's going to be said there, as the Guardian newspaper is already reporting, is that it's going to be incredibly difficult to make the commitment in Paris to stay within 1.5 degrees centigrade. Well, what do we do in this kind of situation? Derek and Nancy Cassidy are certainly our allies in this. They were guests a year ago on the Common Good Podcast, episode 91, telling of their experience with the climate mobilization, which they continue to be part of. What climate mobilization really emphasizes that climate crises are just moving so fast, they're so big, and they require a World War II size of mobilization. And, of course, we're not getting anything like that. So what's their spirit like? What kind of information do they have to share? Let's go to that interview that I made just a couple of days ago. It was almost a year ago that Derek Cassidy, Nancy Cassidy, and I had a conversation on climate mobilization. We're together again today, and we're going to have an update of where things are. And most explicitly, we're going to start off with a couple of events that Derek and Nancy have attended that involve Al Gore and the climate summit that Jerry Brown convened. So let's just get into this right off the bat here. Why don't we start with the one that had the highest profile, and that was the one that Jerry Brown convened, and just say what was the thing that drew you to this conference, and what do you think happened? You want to start, Nancy?
Sure. Nice to be with you again, Lee. So what happened in the conference with the governor, first off, it was preceded by 2 days of a pre-conference about climate-smart agriculture. So there is growing consensus that we not only have to stop burning fossil fuels, but we have to actually draw down the greenhouse gases which we have already produced. So we have to do those simultaneously. We have to be looking at how to get the greenhouse gas levels down and build the new energy system so we can stop burning the fossil fuels. So agriculture is a big part of that. And organic agriculture, of course, is the very best example, because organic agriculture, the way nature works is to sequester the carbon and to produce more plant growth. When we use the synthetic fertilizers, it interrupts the natural cycle and carbon is not utilized as it could be. So we heard a lot about carbon farming, which is actually planning for a specific location how to best sequester carbon. And it could be planting a row of trees. It could be reconforming the way that water drains in a certain field. Their plantings and how those are configured. This carbon farming is actually a blueprint for each specific location and a long-term plan on how that land can be what they call a working land, working lands to sequester carbon. So we heard a lot about that. We also saw at the ag part of the meeting an interest to maintain the dairy and beef industries. And there was some, I think, a little bit of propaganda about the value of cows in the whole agriculture system. I'm not disputing that they might have some value, but the rate at which we are growing cows on the planet is way past what the actual planet can sustain. So although we did hear from ranchers who are doing a more humane job of raising cows, which always seems to me a little funny when you're going to kill them, but be that as it may, we did see farmers that were ranchers that were doing small herds and moving them from different parts of the pasture and etc. But I don't think that holds as much promise as actually moving to an organic food system. And of course now we all know that the trees are one of the biggest carbon sinks that we can intervene with on the planet. We've taken 50% of the trees away, harvested 50% of the trees off the earth. So we need to go back and reforest and do it in a way that is sensible and that again honors the natural system, so we don't have these horrific forest fires, which come basically from unmanaged forests where people, humans, have intervened incorrectly and created conditions for these very severe firestorms that we are now seeing.
I'm going to ask a question. These ideas about carbon farming, are these being, at this stage of activity, are they being administered through any kind of agricultural extension services, or is it mostly in the hands I don't know, Farm Bureau or just in, nonprofit organizations that are promoting it? Kind of, where does that stand?
Well, currently, you're right. Most of this is occurring at the local level with resource councils. Some extension programs are involved, but not many. And it, of course, is not widely adopted, which leads us into a segue of the larger conference, the Global Climate Action Summit that the governor put together, where agriculture actually did not have a audience in the main stage. There were some workshops, one or two, that talked about this, but we were pretty disappointed that the main stage presentations at the conference really did not talk much about agriculture and its role. And as a matter of fact, as Governor Brown reported after the conference, he was disappointed because the mix that he was aiming for, which were heads of state, local electeds, mayors and governors from many, many different places, presidents of countries, prime ministers, and all of that, mixed with the philanthropists and the corporations. I think the governor was hoping we were going to come together with some real forward-thinking remedies, and that, from our experience, the conference did not happen, and we left feeling that really we were not where we needed to be, and we are not moving at the speed that is required.
Okay. Yes, you've segued us really into this summit, but it sounds like the agricultural event was in many ways more on, kind of on target. Of course, the summit was trying to pull off something extraordinary, wasn't it? Trying to step into a vacuum that now exists at the national level, and even in countries that are having some action at the national level, it's not enough. So let's shift here to you, Derek, and just get your perspective, starting off with not just the takeaways from the summit, but why you see it or saw it as an important event, perhaps, or what level of importance do you give it, and then you can move into what you think actually happened.
So. It was quite a show, actually. In the Moscone Center in San Francisco, there were a lot of protesters outside the first day who had a lot of things that they wanted to say the summit was not going to accomplish. An interesting thing was in the plaza in front of the Moscone Center was a brand new electric Winnebago. I thought that was really interesting to see that now we're getting electric Winnebagos for people that want to travel around the country. The high point of the conference itself for me was Al Gore coming in for his speech. He is at a level of speaking right now that is really remarkable. Huge energy. He's lost a little weight. He looks terrific. I'm thinking of him for president. I totally think he's going to run for president. And finish the thing that he left unfinished in a way when he got cheated out of the presidency last time. So he got a standing ovation when he walked on the stage and a standing ovation when he finished. He moved himself around the stage in presenting his talk. He knows more about the climate situation than anybody in the world, I believe. I don't think anybody can touch him on what he knows about the climate. In the climate training that Nancy attended the week before the summit, he showed 400 slides personally. It took him 2.5 hours to show them, and these slides all tell the story of climate change. They're remarkable slides. Nancy and all of the participants have the slides now, so we have them in the community, and we can take them around town. A picture that I saw in the summit on the stage that really impacted me was a picture of the globe, our beautiful blue and green spaceship that we're riding through space on with the atmosphere around the globe. And the atmosphere is a very thin kind of ribbon around the planet. Of course, it covers the whole planet, but it's about 10 miles thick is all. Somebody said the distance from San Diego to La Mesa. And that atmosphere is the thing that allows us to survive, because without that atmosphere, which many of the other planets don't have, maybe none of the other planets have an atmosphere, the sun will cook us all to death. So this wonderful atmosphere, I just got so in touch with the atmosphere and how it circles the planet and covers the planet, and the fossil fuel industry is using it for their cesspool, for their place to dump their waste. And the fossil fuel industry is the only industry that does not have to take care of their waste. They can just shoot it up into the atmosphere and let it sit there. And there will come a time when the atmosphere can't hold any more of it. And then we'll all be done. But we do have time before that happens. So I'm still optimistic about the fact that we're going to save ourselves. I'm fascinated with the question of whether human beings are going to be able to save themselves. And it's not, the question is not settled. Scripps Institution of Oceanography, as you may know, has said that there's a 10% risk of human extinction after 2050. So we have that for the first time from Scripps. They had not used the extinction word, the E word, prior to just recently, and now they're talking about it. And it was mentioned at the conference, at the summit, many times. People talked about the existential threat of climate change. Existential, that comes from the word existence. And so we, our existence as humans is threatened, along with all the other species. And people know that now. It's widely accepted that we have an existential threat. And the thing that the summit did not get to, although it came close in a seminar that went on outside the summit, at the same time of the summit, where Tom Steyer came close to saying, he mentioned World War II and what we did in World War II and how Roosevelt turned to the car companies in World War II and said, you know, I need your productive capacity now for this war effort. And they said, oh, okay, Mr. President, we can put 20% in. And he said, no, I need 100%. You're not going to make any more cars for 5 years. And that's what happened. And that's what the president called for. Our president today will never call for what we need to do today as a nation to build a new wind, water, and solar infrastructure to replace fossil fuels. But the people may at some point decide to demand it and ask for it. And that's what we're waiting for. We're very close to having that happen, I believe. I believe it may take a few more disasters for the people to realize that that's what we need to do. But Tom Steyer almost got to the place of doing it. The Democratic Party 2 weeks ago renewed in their national platform the call for the national mobilization to build the new wind, water, and solar infrastructure for America. And we know that when America finally does that, which I believe we will set the example for the world, and then the whole world is going to have to replace fossil fuels on a global basis.
My goodness, that was a, in my opinion, a great patriotic storyline there, Derek. You know, as thank you for these wonderful overviews of these two events, the carbon agriculture and then the summit, and the images. And you've named a couple of people who I think you experienced as really champions of the cause. Did you encounter other people? They may not be high profile or high lots of name recognition, but who you really believe are really champions in terms of getting this, in terms of how fast we need to get there, using the strategies or technologies to get there at the speed that we need. I'd really be interested in who you experienced as really that we used to call them points of light or champions or whatever.
Well, thank you for that question, and the answer basically is no. So you asked earlier why we were interested in these events. First of all, I was interested in the Gore training because I want to be able to speak more effectively about the climate emergency, and that is something that they really delivered at that three-day training. They had people there who understand how crowds receive information. They talked about how you physically use your hands and how you incorporate data so that it's accessible. So they really delivered on the nuts and bolts of just plain presenting. And that was, besides the content, that was really very valuable.
We'll return momentarily to Lee's conversation with the Cassidys about the California Climate Summit. Well, the common good feature for this episode is about Growth Busters. Growth Busters is a movie, a blog, a podcast, and over 100 short YouTube videos, the products of Dave Gardner and his small staff. It has a lot in common with Jubilee One Earth Economics and Simple Living Works. It deals with economic growth, overpopulation, urban growth, overconsumption, and a media bias toward unsustainable growth. Visit growthbusters.org and consider sponsoring a showing of the movie Growth Busters, Hooked on Growth, in your community. Now let's return to the conversation with the Cassidys.
A lot of my motivation in attending the Governor's Summit was to see how far along the world was and where we're getting leadership. And of course, as we might expect, the people that are most affected are the most urgent, and that would be our low-lying island communities and some of the underdeveloped nations. And they made very emotional and heartfelt pleas for the first world to move more rapidly and to understand the human consequences of Native peoples losing their livelihoods, not being able to access their normal food sources and their water, the implications for fresh water and the like. That was very impactful, but the leaders that we would expect to take a more proactive role and to call for faster action, that was basically missing, and it was disappointing. One of the reasons that we went was to see what the world community that's engaged in this problem was saying, and just a small example, which may be a little unfair, but the Starbucks guy, he got a lot of time on the stage, and he was so proud to announce that by 2022, Starbucks is going to stop with the plastic straws. Shocking. In light of the climate emergency and of the report that Dr. Ramananthan gave at the summit, he was very well received, by the way, as a Tang Award recipient, which I guess is like the Nobel Prize in his field. He's saying that we need to bend this curve of emissions by 2020. We need to understand, as he says, this is not a political problem, this is a math problem. You're putting up so many tons of pollution, you only have so much atmosphere and so much ocean, it has a finite endpoint. So I would say there were some bright points. George Shultz was there from the Republican establishment, you might say, from the 80s. He's on this. He was, as a 90-year-old, he was powerful and made a great call for Washington to get on the program. And in fact, on his own hook, is taking scientists from MIT and Stanford to Washington to make scientific presentations to some of the members of the staff of Congress people up there. He was great. Rich Trumka made a great presentation about how
this is the AFL-CIO.
Thank you. How this is a jobs opportunity. This is a way to get full employment and good paying jobs. So there were a few bright spots.
Michael Bloomberg.
Yep.
Former mayor of New York City.
And then there were the protesters who somehow, in spite of the most complete security that I've seen with private security and San Francisco police officers and undercover people, they managed to get into the conference for the last session when they were having Jane Goodall and one of her favorites, Dave Matthews of the Dave Matthews Band. He was performing. He sang one of his songs, and then out of nowhere, six of the protesters got up and stood on their seats and started singing. And they were singing, "Brown, This Is Your Last Chance." And they were directed, of course, toward the fracking situation. But Dave Matthews was so poised, he just stopped on the stage. He waited while the protesters did their thing and then were escorted out. And then he said, which I think was a great ending for the conference, he said, "Every voice needs to be heard, and this is not just Brown's last chance."
Yeah. Well, amid all the disappointments, you're sharing some fairly inspiring things, actually. But let's talk now a little bit here at the local level, because I know that that's where all of us are. Well, all of us. A lot of us feel a great need to choose actions that matter, and certainly to mobilize, but also just to see some policies change, and also to see household practices that change, and people really fired up about this and all. And so I just wonder, in the last year, what do you see happening locally that encourages you, or that just has to, where we just have to get with it? Derek, why don't we start with you?
So one thing we're working on right now is getting the San Diego City Council to declare a climate emergency. And Berkeley City Council has done it, and Richmond City Council has done it, and the county of Montgomery County in Maryland has done it, and so has
Hoboken,
New Jersey. So we've gone down and we've cased the joint, you might say, and we've learned that we have to get the environmental committee of the city council to pass this climate emergency first. They would declare a climate emergency exists. That's all. It doesn't cost any money. They don't have to do anything. They just have to declare that a climate emergency exists and that they support the idea of America mobilizing to build the new infrastructure to replace fossil fuels. So they sent us over to the city attorney first to see if she said this would be legal for the city council to declare an emergency, and she said it certainly would. She said that's a policy matter. And so then we found out that there are four persons, council people, on the environment committee, two Democrats, two Republicans. The Democrats will be for the climate emergency. We will have to get, so we're working on two Republican staff people, and then trying to get, our goal is to get it to those two Republican council people and find out if one of them, if just one of those Republican council people will go for a climate emergency in support of the mobilization, then we will have the council, we know we have the votes on the council as a whole. So we urge people, if people want to do something, write your San Diego City Council person and ask them to please support the idea of a climate emergency being declared in San Diego. Once the city council declares a climate emergency, the media will be very interested. They will come down. Of course, they cover the council meetings. They see the council declare a climate emergency. They will want to look into that and find out what's behind that. Why would the council be declaring a climate emergency? And that will help educate the media, because the electronic media locally and in the nation are failing us about climate change. And Al Gore talks about that in his speeches, how there's a media blackout, he says. And last year, for instance, we only got about 40 minutes of coverage of climate change in the electronic media, the national media. And so the newspapers are doing better than the electronic media. Just 2 days ago, the Los Angeles Times had a huge front page story about the ozone levels that are rising in Los Angeles and actually causing some deaths because people die premature death due to air pollution like ozone, heart attacks, emphysema, things like that. So the LA Times and the New York Times and Washington Post and others are doing a really good job in tying the things that are happening, like the hurricanes, to changes in the climate overall due to fossil fuel pollution.
Okay, so that's some action we can take at a political level. Is that the primary place of interest for you? Or I'm just thinking there's also the religious communities. There's also the school institutions that we have. There's certainly, any alliance of local businesses could be effective, it seems. Do you know anything happening in that regard at all? I guess I feel like some of that could be more valuable, just in my own thinking. I wonder if you know anything about that happening locally.
Well, we do know that Dr. Ramananthan, who advises the Pope, is one of our local resources and is extremely interested in making alliances with the local faith community. Now, we hold out a little hope that we have a new Catholic bishop in the area, and we have not made a visit there, but we visited the prior bishop, and he did not express a lot of concern or interest, even though, of course, the Pope has. So we have a new leader here of the Catholic community that we hope will be helpful. And there's, of course, the Unitarians. They're doing their part. The Quakers are, of course, seeing the relationship between climate disruption and peace. But so far, we have not seen the robust response from the faith community that we would hope to see in light of the seriousness and how much this is affecting humans and families.
Yeah, but just to say that as a clergy person who worked 32 years in the church, I'm also deeply disappointed in that there's this inability to make creation, would be a type of language to use, a core part of theology, Jewish, Muslim, all of it. And some are doing it, but to really get it into the congregation and to make the connection to spiritual practice, that this isn't just environmentalism, this is spiritual practice. And that takes it, for many people, to a kind of more soul level that's more compelling. So I'm looking for that. I'm so looking for the people who are doing that, and let's see where it goes. Because I'm thinking that our window, the next 2 years are critical, but 2025, anything beyond that is too late. That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, Derek, I interrupted you. You want to go there?
Yeah, I'm actually optimistic about the spiritual community. If we could get down there and talk to them, we need people like you, Lee, with 32 years of experience, who can bolster our effort. I'm quite optimistic about, I just don't think anybody's really reaching out to them. And some of them, now we had Bishop, the African-American Bishop
McKinney
appear at one of our rallies, and he gave a stem winder of a climate speech. So the man obviously had thought a lot about it, and he fit right in with what we were talking about that evening at that rally. So I believe there are, and then we have the Unitarian Universalist lady up in North County, Reverend Beth.
Beth Johnson.
Yes, Beth Johnson, who is very good on this issue. And there are others. We haven't had the manpower, woman power, human power to reach out to the spiritual community. Dr. Ramananthan has urged us to, and we have promised him that we have called the Catholic Bishop's office. We've talked to the aide to the Catholic Bishop, and we haven't followed up. To tell you the truth, right now, the election is taking all the oxygen out of the room. Everybody wants to concentrate on this election and flip the Congress, flip the House. And we haven't done much We've been sidetracked. We're working a lot in the election right now. I'm organizing precincts in La Jolla, precinct walkers to help in the La Jolla area, and also out here to help the congressional candidate, Amar Campanajar, who is an incredible candidate. And we're pulling people from La Jolla out this way to help him get elected. He's now even in the polls with Duncan Hunter Jr., and I fully expect him to be elected. So we'll see. He raised over $1 million in the primary. No Democratic congressional candidate has ever raised $1 million in a primary in this county like Campanajar did. 29 years old, worked in the Obama White House with a team of people who check out the president's letters. Every day the president gets 10,000 letters. Campanajar was working with others to pick the letters, the 10 letters the president read every night. As a result, Campanajar knows all the issues of the American people. He has seen what the American people want, and I'm very encouraged by his work.
Well, maybe this is a good way to bring our conversation to conclusion. I think I've just feeling recruited to work with you on the religious community a little more explicitly and intentionally than I have. And by the way, the little mini book that I handed you before, Jubilee Circles, is a strategy very relevant to spiritual communities for forming little groups in that have a they don't have to have a religious bent, but the appendix to the book encourages it. And so it's a strategy that could be used and is being used, frankly. It's very effective in the two places in Mexico where it's being used. We're trying to form it into a more compelling way here in San Diego. So we need to talk some further, I guess, and we can do that after this conversation ends, which it's really doing at this point. I'm just really grateful for the breadth of story you've given us. You know, it seems to me that a new narrative is beginning to happen. You know, Juanita, my spouse, and I were talking about this just yesterday. Where do we hear the new narrative? Is there really a new narrative? Because, you know, it just we've been disappointed because the National Committee of the Democrats, we don't feel, is giving us a new narrative, and they haven't been for the last while. We feel like the Just Democrats and a few others are, in fact, being pretty good. I think Bernie Sanders is being really good at giving us a new narrative. And I don't know that it's set, but in the narratives that I'm hearing in some of those circles, there is a ecological element, strong ecological element. When I look at the 30,000 people who marched just on September 8 in San Francisco, where my daughter marched as well, there's a strong spiritual component in that march and spiritual activism. So I'm looking to those places just to signal where I'm coming from in all of this. So if there's any kind of final comment that either of you want to make, because this is going to be your last chance. Okay, here we go, Nancy.
Well, I believe, like you, Lee, that this is the moral issue of our time, and that we have to ask ourselves really the salient Christian question, what would Jesus do? And we think Jesus was about a social structure that took the needs of the people in mind and had that be the motivator instead of profit and greed, which is motivating us now.
Yes, he was not impressed with superpowers. Not at all. He preferred lilies of the field. He could look at the lily of the field and say, gee, I'm more impressed with this than any superpower. And so he singled out Jesus, a Jewish spiritual leader, adopted, some people would say misappropriated by Christians, but nonetheless a very powerful figure, as other figures of other spiritual paths and cultures have been and are, and We have strong sacred texts of various persuasions to help us along. Well, thank you so much. We're going to say this is where we'll take the conversation today, and who knows, we may be back in a few months talking some more about this, because we're going to keep pushing for as much change as we can by 2020. And I don't know, I see the crows fly over, and they remind me of that there's still magic and mystery in the universe, and boy, do we need a dose of that right now, along with some intelligence. So thank you so much for being with us.
You've been listening to part two of Lee's conversation with the Cassidys.
And in the next episode, Jerry, we'll hear from two women leading Jubilee circles in Mexico. I was able to record that conversation on my recent trip to Mexico while we were in San Cristobal. And there we were, I was addressing a seminary class about Jubilee economics, but also our three circles met for 3 days of sharing stories and planning. It was an extraordinary time. I also want to say that on October 11th, for anyone in the San Diego area, I'll be speaking, along with my colleague in the One Earth Project, Michael Johnson, will be speaking at St. Andrew's Church at a luncheon. It's a midday event at St. Andrew's Lutheran Church in San Diego. So if you're listening and you're able to come, please do. It'll be a luncheon served there.
Thanks, Lee. Have you listened to our recent episodes? In September, we heard from Grace Jerry and her personal story about how global Christian missionary work moved away from its participation in the imperialist and colonial actions of European countries and their churches toward the liberation work of working side by side with locals in whatever country and church hosted a U.S. missionary as a guest. On the mid-month episodes this fall, you'll hear a mini-series on having a less consumer Christmas called Whose Birthday? It's based on an annual publication for individuals, families, and congregations called Whose Birthday Is It Anyway? It gently moves us away from overconsumption, especially at Christmas time when consumerism runs rampant. Do listen. You're sure to pick up thoughts you'll value. We certainly did as we created those episodes. Also, please subscribe to my Simpler Living Daily Nudge to get quick reminders of Lee's blogs, the Common Good Podcast, Simple Living Works Podcast, and other intriguing happenings and events, such as Nonconform Freely Celebrations, ways to honor rites of passage and holidays without consumerism. Please tell us your thoughts on these subjects. Leave a message on the Common Good Podcast and Simple Living Works Facebook pages. Well, it's time to wrap up this episode. If you're a regular listener, you've heard our closing comments, so we'll say goodbye now. But if you're a newer listener, here's what we'd like you to know about the podcast. Please subscribe to our Jubilee Economics, One Earth, and Simple Living Works blogs. We post new nearly every week, so if you're a subscriber, you'll be told when we post something new. Subscriptions are free. Subscribe to our blogs through our websites. You can also subscribe to the Common Good Podcast and Simple Living Works Podcast at iTunes or your favorite podcast service. Urge your friends to do the same. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works with co-host Lee Van Ham of the Common Good Podcast and Jubilee One Earth Economics, wishing you well as we strive together to bring simpler One Earth living into being for the common good.